Mic check. Mic check.
Thanks for joining us for another edition of MPM Radio. Another Wednesday edition, kind of back on schedule. We're going into probably a lull or a slower part of the off season, so we'll all have to band together to get through the next couple months. But hopefully everybody's getting geared up for summertime. So I got my boys Dan and August on here. Dan, how are you, buddy?
Doing good, man. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing great. We've missed you, man. Everything going well in your world?
Yeah, I don't know. It's a little rainy up here right now. The schedule's a little crazy, but other than that, everything's going real good.
I know that's right. August, how are you, buddy?
Man, I'm doing pretty dang well. Pretty excited for this episode. Glad to have the whole gang back together. And I don't know. I think we were just talking about how many podcasts we've done over the past few weeks. I think I've actually talked to iTunes more than I've talked to my wife since about Thursday night. So outside of that, I'm doing pretty well. She's handling that pretty well, too. She understands.
Awesome. Yeah. Yeah, you've been prolific lately. So thank you so much for picking up the slack for myself. And I know Dan, with his busy schedule, you've been a constant. And also a shout-out to Terry Lambert. I just listened to your guys' episode today, and I thought it was really fantastic. And it's nice to actually be talking about the actual draft picks that we made, instead of, like you'd mentioned, all the speculation that we had went round and round on for so long. So before we kick off into the Titans topics, I just wanted to give our listeners a quick reminder about following us on Twitter at AugustWest_MCM, at DanamiteTN, and myself at DrunkestDroog. And we got some more of the reviews rolling in, so please take a second to like, subscribe, retweet, spread the word out there. We really appreciate it, and it's an easy and free way for us to know that you guys are enjoying what we're doing. So that being said, the news that came out today was we ended up firing a couple scouts and hiring Ryan Cowden, a guy away from the Panthers, and giving him the player personnel director title. Dan, you got a take on that? I thought maybe this would be something in your wheelhouse a bit.
I don't know much about him. Now, some of the scouts that we've had on hand, we've had since the silent era. You know, they've been around, and I think you can look at the drafts, and yes, Mike Reinfeld, and yes, Rustin Webster catch a lot of flack for it. But there's obviously something wrong and just kind of past its due date in the scouting department. So they made a move, two moves, actually. And, you know, it's probably for the better. But the guy that they hired from Carolina, see, I'd seen in our comments earlier in the week, you know, when the Derrick Henry pick came around, someone had said something along the lines of Carolina had won with that offense. They won 15 games last year with that offense, the kind of offense that we're kind of you know, orbiting right now.
Yeah.
And to just get a guy like that and bring him in here who has built that squad up, has seen it done a certain way, and, I mean, it clearly works in the NFL, to hire him over and to bring him in, I think it's a good thing if that's the direction we're going here.
How about you, August?
Yeah, I mean, I feel the same way. The scouting moves are kind of hard for anybody on the outside to really comment on. I mean, I think even, you know, people like us and other really hardcore Titans fans, probably like C.O. Bricado is about the only scout that anybody could actually name off the top of their heads. And, you know, unfortunately he passed away earlier this year. So rest in peace to him. And thanks for all the hard work. He did some amazing work with the Titans. And so it's hard for me to really necessarily comment on that other than I like that there's actually the news being reported, because scouts get shuffled. We just never really hear about it. And as soon as I saw that news from Paul Kaharski, you know, actually gave a shout out to him. It was like, hey, I like hearing about that. And it would be really cool over the off season to, you know, get to know the scouting staff a little bit more as far as like some profiles and maybe their comments, that sort of thing. I also like seeing John Robinson, you know, sort of reshape everything in his vision as far as how he wants all that stuff to work. And the guy from Carolina that we brought in, are you talking about the new, was it director of player development spot?
Yeah, or player personnel director is what I'd noted
there
on
we
here,
go.
But
there we go. And that was a spot that I believe Lake Dawson had for a good amount of time. And then, you know, was eventually elevated to VP of operations before he was let go in really early 2015, before that season. And that spot was never actually backfilled by Russin Webster or any of the ownership group or anything. So, you know, that's a pretty standard spot that most franchises have to have these days. Tends to be the guy who does the work for the GM in terms of, you know, sports science stuff, you know, setting training schedules, helping with the coaching staff, but also, you know, doing all of those, all of that research to try and get the most out of your players physically and make sure everything's running smoothly. So, you know, it sounds like he had a really good reputation for that in Carolina, and I think it's going to help us. I think it probably actually, you know, caused more instability last year having that position open.
And with the timing, I kind of felt like in some of the press conferences that Robinson did, like right when he had first gotten hired and stuff, I didn't feel like he was given like a glowing report on the personnel side of things. And obviously, as bad as we've drafted and our, look no further than our record. So I kind of felt like maybe he was hamstrung a little bit, but since he was hired with already and they were having to start getting ready for the draft, I think maybe he just felt like it'd be better to hang in with these guys and see who I can keep and work with and see who is going to show him that they're not going to see eye to eye and it'd be better to move on. And I'm guessing that the two scouts were the ones that he felt like these guys are grading and viewing football with different eyes and criteria that I am. And the thing I liked about the Ryan Cowden hire is obviously that he came from the Panthers, and not that I am qualified to say anything bad about an NFL coach, but I've watching the Panthers games, I really felt like they were winning because they had a better team and not that they were really out coaching anybody. It never seemed like they were just kind of lining up and beating you. You know, and it took them all the way to the Super Bowl.
How dare you question the offensive brilliance of Mike Shula, sir?
Right. I know. We had a lot of people clamoring for him to be our guy. You know?
No, man. I'm kidding. He's nice, but he's not a beast or anything like that. Yeah, I mean, they won those games on sheer talent and will and motivation. I think Rivera has evolved into a very good motivational coach. He knows how to coach defense. But you look up and down that roster and it's guys they drafted. That's what you want to do.
Right. So poaching somebody from an organization that drafts well, I think, it has me thinking if maybe next year's draft, when we got two picks in the first round, it might be – this draft I feel really good about, but – when Robinson has all his guys in-house for a full preparation, it could be an even better and more cohesive unit for the next draft. So I'm excited about it. It seems, even though, like you said, it's kind of a back-end stuff, I guess we'd also – well, Dan, did you get a chance to say – you'd mentioned the Derrick Henry pick. And I know me and August were talking up how you nailed that one, but have you gotten a victory lap on the podcast yet?
I have not gotten a
victory lap
on the podcast.
Let's give Dan a minute.
I've only called two things, I think, and I don't even know how many years I've been doing this, but I've only called two things right my entire, like, career on MCM Radio, and that was unfortunately, back in training camp in 2012, I told everybody to look out for Darius Raynaud because he was an excellent return man. I'd seen him in training camp, and sure enough, they stuck with him, and he was decent the first year, and then he just went, you know, bonkers, and we ended up cutting him. Not too good.
How did that second
not
year
start
out?
For Darius
Remember
Raynaud.
The safety? First kickoff?
Yeah.
Of the season. Yeah. Oh, God.
Yeah.
No one's ever going to forget that. And then this pick, which, you know, I mean, it just made sense to me. So I'm very happy for it. But more so than being right, I could have been way off base and been completely wrong, and they could have taken him in the fifth round. Either way, this is my favorite draft pick in a long, long time. And I really think that people who are knocking it and people are saying, you know, they have DeMarco Murray, so why bother, that kind of thing. I think he's going to be a beast back there. I really, really do. And it instantly made me more excited for the season.
I'm excited to see what he's going to do, too. You had me convinced with how excited you were about it before we drafted him, you know, just the possibility. I know August was ready to come to blows over the whole thing, but I think he's coming around, too. And obviously, if he shows up on Sundays, then that's really – he's going to win a lot of people over then.
Well, and I'll say one thing that helped me be much more comfortable with the pick is DeMarco Murray's reaction to it.
Yeah.
The fact that he was immediately like, hell yeah, you guys got me a big right tackle, and now you got me, you know, a dude who can go in there and bruise the defense and make things easier for me, you know, when I'm not the one toting the rock. And immediately kind of, you know, as soon as – I think as soon as he was at the facility, DeMarco Murray was there, and, you know, he was it Malarkey, I think, said that he called DeMarco before they made that pick and said, hey, look, this is what we're going to do. You're going to be all right with it? And he was excited, like, right from jump. That makes me feel a lot better. And, you know, I think the overall philosophy that we saw develop over the course of this draft made me feel a little bit better about it. I'm still not 100% on the pick, but, Dan, I will give you kudos, just as I gave myself kudos for predicting that we would get Jack Conklin and that we would probably trade with the Browns.
I remember just now the third thing that I said was going to come true, and that was Jake Walker being terrible and August defending him to the very, very end. And I got that correct, too. But overall, with the draft and as far as DeMarco Murray's reaction to Henry, I mean, I don't think anybody can be upset with any of that. Him wanting to take on a mentor role is definitely a good thing, I think.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I know one certain football, quote-unquote, analytics website that wasn't happy with it.
Oh, my God.
Well, yeah, go ahead and talk about that, August. I had seen your note that PFF trashed the Henry pick. So you have the floor, sir.
Okay, so there was a big post that Jimmy did pointing out that PFF had called Derrick Henry one of the worst picks in the draft. They rated him as the eighth worst overall value for a pick in the draft. Which, I mean, I think Titans fans, even the ones who didn't love the pick, like, you know, myself, and those who did love the pick were immediately like, kind of, are you serious, really? Like, what are you guys talking about? The thing that killed me is, you know, after being really just sort of miffed about it, everybody knows I don't like them. I'll go into more detail at a later point. You're probably tired of hearing that, too. But if you go back to the round two grades that this same service did based upon their own you know, rating systems and everything, they gave nine players in the second round equal or lower grades than they did that Derrick Henry pick. We had three picks in the second round. So, you know, I mean, only 28 teams took second round picks, period, because we had three of them locked up. That just doesn't make any sense to me. It's completely contradictory. I think the people that are complaining about that pick just really don't know anything about the Titans, haven't paid close attention to what they want to do, the way they want to go. And, look, if you have an issue with a philosophy of wanting to be bigger and stronger while everybody else is getting smaller and faster. I understand that, but I don't think that's the pick to highlight.
Well, and I think that the NFL is kind of cyclical with things. We have seen big, strong running back kind of make a little bit of a resurgence because there's a lot of 225-pound linebackers now, you know, where when the defenses overall were bigger, it seemed like the smaller, faster guys were exceeding. And then as the league went to the more pass-happy offenses, then you have safeties playing linebackers and all together smaller size. So, we, like you'd mentioned, we just saw the Panthers go 15-1 with a similar style of offense that we're trying to put together. So, and I would also argue that Henry wasn't going to be the pick. The only reason he was the pick is because we had 3 second rounders. If we had one or two, they're not going running back. But I still like the pick, and I see that the draft really was about changing the changing our offensive scheme to match what Mularkey wants to do. And if we can have a better running game, then that's only going to help Marcus Mariota.
If those guys had said that they didn't like the pick because they really liked what they saw out of Antonio Andrews or David Cobb or somebody else on the roster, you know, that plays running back, that would be one thing. But I'm pretty sure they've been trashing those guys too, as all Titans fans pretty much have. I feel like I'm the lone guy left in Antonio Andrews' corner. But I mean, you know, you're resting a whole lot on a 28-year-old guy's, you know, knees and legs who's, you know, rushed for 2,000 yards and rushed for almost 1,200 yards in another season already. So, I mean, they wanted some insurance there.
Right. And we're all hoping and expecting that Murray, that last year was an anomaly and not just the player he's become. So we can be excited and hope for the best, but we got a plan for the worst. You know, it really was them hedging their bets. So,
yeah, I think, I don't know who said it. I was reading the comments the other day and someone said, you know, let's just say that DeMarco Murray is amazing. You know, thumbs up to everybody. We're happy about it. But, I mean, he's still 28 years old, and do you want to start grooming a running back in behind him after he's done? And we got to start a rookie out there, or would you rather have somebody that could come in and ease their way in into the rotation and eventually start taking huge chunks away from that? That's the hope at some point down the line. And, I, you know, it just makes too much sense to me not to bring in a guy now who fits the same scheme, who's in the same mold, and just have him spell this guy. You don't lose anything from an offensive scheme standpoint that way as well.
Agreed. And I had listened to Greg Cosell on the radio earlier, and he pretty much said Henry is a bigger, faster version of DeMarco Murray. You know, they both are pretty dependent on the offensive line and how good it is. But if we slowly build this offensive line and put a good quality unit in front of these guys, then we're going to get similar production. And I like your point is, if DeMarco's the bell cow for the next 2 seasons, let's hope, and then that when he's 30, Henry will be going into his third year, and hopefully we got to start running back, and it's not a position of need. I, a lot of people were saying how good the running back crop in next year's draft is going to be, but I'm not really in love with us spending a first-round pick on a running back, especially if we can get some good production. And we got to be the only team in history that's got 2 Heisman Trophy winners and 2 Mr. Irrelevance on the same squad.
Yeah, I think we can say that with confidence. Having researched it, I can't believe that would happen anywhere else.
Right. Yeah, we went from having the first pick in the draft to the very last one. So it's been interesting. Let's see here. We had a couple. NFL.com had Henry listed as a better receiver than Alabama was using him at. Did you see anything that would back that up, August?
Well, the note that, and I did not get the name of the guy in the MCM comments, but hat tip to whoever it was that dug it up. During Alabama's pro day, there were not enough wide receivers present for them to conduct all of the passing drills and catching drills that they wanted to have. So Derrick Henry happily jumped in, ran the wide receiving spots, and scouts almost dropped their jaws because he basically didn't drop a single catch and ran his route much better than you would think for a guy out of Alabama, which, as I kept saying over and over again, they don't throw to the running back enough to know whether or not the guy can really do anything in the pass game.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, an unknown is not a known. The lack of the absence of evidence is not evidence of absence, as Donald Rumsfeld once horribly said. So, I mean, that at least made me feel a little bit better, combined with some of the film of his ability to pass block. We're not going to have a running back back there just diving at guys' knees. He can actually stand up and buck up to some of the defensive ends in this league. Those two things made me feel a lot better.
Well, August said, Alabama's offensive scheme, I don't even know, other than maybe five times in his career that he was even thrown to. And you just watch them week in and week out here in SEC country, and you never see anyone get the ball thrown to him that's coming out of the backfield. So, obviously he can catch a lot better than they say he can, though. So, I mean, that's a great thing, but it definitely doesn't fit Nick Saban's system. So we don't have a lot of film on it.
Yeah, man, you're not going to split him out wide and tell him to run, a slant route over the middle. But if he can catch something coming out of the backfield, if he can be a decent option on a screenplay, that sort of stuff, I mean, that's just another thing in the toolbox for us.
And you can have him and Murray on the field at the same time. He can play fullback.
Whoa, they play the same position, Jeff Fisher.
Wait, we got a fullback, man. Johnson Fowler ain't going nowhere. Put them all three in the backfield, dude. And just tell somebody to step up and stop that.
You remember when we signed Randy Moss and they wouldn't put him on the field with Kenny Britt, even though because he said they play the same position.
Oh, God, yeah. Yes, that was – yeah, I mean, you got to have balls of steel to sit in front of a media room and say that and act like you're going to get away with it.
I thought, what is going on? That's when I knew that the current NFL had left old Fisher way behind because he wasn't even trying to get the best players on the field at the same time. But I digress. I can rant about that for a while. Now, the polar opposite of the PFF, trashing the Henry pick. August, you got a note here about Football Outsiders Backcast projection model rated Derrick Henry the number one back. So what is Backcast?
Okay, so Backcast is a first-year projection model that Football Outsiders has come up with. And for people not familiar with Football Outsiders, they're like kind of chess masters when it comes to a lot of this deep analytics and sort of next-level thinking stuff, whereas PFF is, I think I compared them to the peg game that's on the table at Cracker Barrel. These guys really know their stuff, can acknowledge the fact that they're not perfect, but they're trying to give context for production and give comparisons that will allow you to actually see what not necessarily might happen, but what a guy might be capable of doing. So this is the new one they came up with. It's a first year. There's going to be anomalies. Doesn't mean it's perfect. But, I think when you go, they tested every running back since like 2003, and the top guys were like LaDainian Tomlinson, Ricky Williams, D'Angelo Williams, and another guy I can't remember who did really, really well. So, I mean, the back testing on it's pretty solid. And basically, he came out as the number one running back in this draft class, above even Ezekiel Elliott, who I think was number two. Now, that being said, his rating wasn't stellar. There was no super, superstar running back in their analysis in this draft, but that's a far cry from the way most people had rated Derrick Henry. And that made me, like I said, once again, it's another thing that makes me feel a little bit better. They're trying to look at what he can do in context of his size, his speed, his production, and a lot of other things. And being able to fit it into a model that neutralizes, the level of play that he's going against and some of the other issues that ended up skewing, other sites' analysis. I thought that's a much better thing to look at than what a lot of other analytics companies that are starting to look at the NFL came up with.
I like that. It reminds me of, I think it was called a spark rating, but it was something where it was an analytic thing. And Russell Wilson, is that what it was? Russell Wilson was like one of the best ever at this rating, and they threw it out as an anomaly, like an outlier. And then, you know, obviously he's been in two Super Bowls and is a pretty good quarterback. So
no, you're right. That was the quarterback when this Batcast rating replaces their old system, which was called Speed Score. That used to be what they used for running backs. And they use, like, Sackseer is the name of the thing they do for pass rushers, which, in all honesty, they hated the Kevin Dodd pick. He did not do well in their rating system at all. So that'll be an interesting thing to keep an eye on.
Mm. How'd you feel about the Dodd pick, Dan?
I wasn't blown away with it or anything. You know, I mean, there's a lot of talent on that defense. I'm glad that we got a bigger guy that, you know, Dick LeBeau can groom and those kind of things. You know, and from that, I know August liked it and that he's excited by it. And I trust his evaluation whenever it comes to that. But it was just kind of like that. I mean, moving on, who else we got here? To me,
it caught me off guard. But do you guys remember during the draft how there was some rumblings that we might be moving back up into the first? You know, like the back end of the first, like around the 25th-ish? Was he the target, you think?
I think Vernon Butler was the target. That's easy to say because we've been talking about Vernon Butler forever and ever. But you saw him come off the board with one of the last two picks of the draft.
To the Panthers,
yeah. And we just hired a guy away from the Panthers. See, it's all coming full circle, guys. But we didn't get Butler. Now, with Dodd, I don't know. Like, I tried digging in. I know that he was kind of a flash-in-the-pan guy, but when he was flashing, it was on the biggest and brightest stages. During that, I know I referenced it earlier, but listening to Greg Cosell, he felt like Dodd is a better prospect than Shaq Lawson, who got taken much higher. It was kind of his partner in crime. And I guess if you get a guy at 33 that was overshadowed a little bit by Shaq Lawson, who went high, and then Vic Beasley went high last year. Maybe 33, you know, maybe he was destined to be a first-round pick, and we might have got good value in there. I'd seen a lot of scouts' big boards had him in, like, that 15 to 20 range. So I am a little nervous about it, but he got compared to, like, Malik Jackson, and he just signed a, you know, $90 million thing in Jacksonville and stuff. So I might have liked one of the guys better that went after him. You know, it seemed like the A'shaun Robinson kid and a few others that were all in that range. But we definitely needed some guy, a big guy, to help, you know, when Morgan is off the field or, gosh, if he gets hurt again, you know, where maybe he can fill in. So time will tell, but I think it was all right. It's probably one of my least favorite picks at where we took him, but he could definitely change my mind on that. Let's see, what else? Oh, we declined the fifth-year option on Chance Warmack. Anybody surprised at that?
I'm surprised that they did it. I'm glad that they did it, though.
Yeah, you can't pay him $12 million.
Right. But, you know, this is just another sign that the times are changing with the Titans. The old Titans probably would have tagged him with it. But now that Robinson's coming in here running the show, he's sharpening the axe, man. He's going to make cuts wherever he feels it's necessary. So.
Oh, you mean that old Titans team that gave Bo Scaife the franchise tag twice?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then gave Michael Griffin a ridiculous contract after that.
Oh, man. I know. I'm with you, Dan. I'm glad they did it. I don't know if I'm as surprised because, you know, we're dealing with a front office that really doesn't have any connection with everybody, you know, kind of a fresh start. And you see a pretty big roster turnover when you get a new GM because you get a new GM because you're losing. So – but I'm definitely glad he just wasn't worth the money.
Exactly. There's no way in the world that you could pay him $12 million, guaranteed $12 million for that season, It wouldn't make any sense. It's part of the problem of how high he went, really. If he was a much later pick, the salary might have been a little more within reason. However, the one thing that caught my eye in John Robinson's comment is that they are looking at maybe moving him back to left guard where he played in college. You remember when we drafted him, he moved to right guard because Levitre was playing left guard. Now that's probably the weakest spot. And Byron Bell, if he's the guy who ends up winning that position, is probably the best right guard on the roster right now. So, I mean, if you're going to move positions with him, you still have the chance to negotiate a contract. It's not like the franchise tag where you can't negotiate after a certain point or anything. It would have been ludicrous for the Titans to spend that money on a guy who really hasn't lived up to expectations, although I don't think he's been garbage.
I think he's been both. He's been good, and I think he's been hot garbage sometimes. So we just I think it's a consistency thing with Chance.
Yeah, so is his coaching. But, yeah, I mean, yeah, absolutely he's been inconsistent. And I think he played better last year. He's shown flashes, but he's got to put it together this year.
I want him to go ahead and move him back to left guard. Put that kid from Arkansas, that road grayer, big old nasty, mean Samoan over there, and then move Chance Warmack back over to his favorite side and let him go at it. If they think he's going to be better there, then just go ahead and do it.
That might be a good thing. The only concern I would have with that, then, is we'd have rookies on the entire right side because Conklin was confirmed to be right tackle. We all knew that, but I guess Robinson was asked point blank, and he said, yeah, Luan left, Conklin's right tackle. So we would have a rookie right tackle and a rookie right guard in that. But I don't know if I would necessarily – these guys are going to have to get out there and play and learn either way. So that may be – the lumps we have to take.
Yeah, and I'll also be interested to see if they're going to change his weight or maybe his, body mass composition with the new scheme that's coming in. That's another thing. If you change the way a guy, the weight he plays at or something like that, you got to see how it's going to affect him.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be hard on him. With Warmack, though, for me, he's kind of been dealt a really bad hand here. He thought he was coming in, and he's going to be coached by, Hall of Fame offensive lineman for his head coach, and that ended after his first year. And it's just been, with the weight issue and the fatigue issues that he had during camp, it's just kind of been a little rough as far as that's concerned. I hope he gets it in shape this year, no matter what side he plays on.
He's had a disaster on either side of him for most of his career.
Yeah.
He's never had a good center, and he's never had a good right tackle. Even that first year with Dave Stewart, I mean, he retired at the end of the season. I mean, Dave Stewart was hobbled that entire season. So maybe give him a little talent and see how he does, and give him some consistency.
I was reading earlier, I was reading an article when you sent me a text earlier in August. It's called, what is this article called? In the Line of Fire, and CBSSports.com had it up. And right now, Chance is with Kyle Long, what's this guy's name here, Bobby Massey of the Cardinals. At you remember the center that was good and then injured, LeCharles Bentley, is like with the Saints, I think, for a while, and maybe the Browns.
Yeah, he got hurt, never played for him.
He has an O-line-centric training camp, right? And these guys are all out there training together, and they sat the guys down and did a bit of a round table, and it was really kind of off the cuff. I think what I gathered from Chance is he's definitely aware of his criticism, but I like the fact that he's out there doing something, and actually in off-season training, and I love how
for
Kyle
sure.
Long played, so him spending time with that guy is a good thing. But they were all asked, have you all faced stubborn coaches who want it done their way and only their way? And Chance really kind of bit into this. I'll read a little bit of it. I had one dude, a coach, who played D3 football at linebacker, and he's teaching me how to play offensive line. If there's nothing wrong with that, you tell me. I play offensive line. I don't play linebacker. I definitely didn't play at a D3 school. Not knocking D3 schools out there, but we're talking about the highest level of football in the world. And you have a guy who's never put his hand in the dirt teaching me how to block. Now, who do you think he's talking about there?
Not Bruce Matthews.
Oh, my gosh.
That's Bob Hostad.
Wow.
Who is now coaching, gosh, where did he end up? He's not in the NFL. He's definitely, I think he's coaching tight ends and fullbacks for Northern Illinois University now. That was our offensive line.
Sounds about right. Chance Warmack is going to love Russ Graham. I'm telling you. I mean, Russ Graham, you look at the kind of offensive lineman that he's developed during the better parts of his career. I think him and Russ Graham are going to hit it all.
And is a Hall of Fame offensive lineman. So he at least comes in with some clout right away when he shows got a Super Bowl ring to show, you know, with the Hogs, with the Redskins back then.
Yeah. You know, every offensive lineman that's ever going to play in the NFL that has any heart about him at all knows who the Hogs are and wants to be part of an offensive line that dominant. So, I mean, if that's not going to get Chance Warmack's blood boiling, then I don't know what is.
They were talking in that article, and then I'll step off. And I might tweet it out for you guys. I think it was a good read and kind of see the perspective on these guys. But they're doing training. They're doing these drills. But they also watch tape. And one of their favorite things to do is put on tape of the 92 Dallas Cowboys line and watch them.
That's not a bad offensive line.
Exactly. And, I mean, you know, now he's got a Hall of Fame offensive line coach. He has a head coach who is all about his offensive and defensive lines and being big, you know, on both sides of the trenches. And he's got two first-round picks around him and one of the highest-paid centers in the league. So if it doesn't work out for him this year, you know, barring any injury or crazy thing like that, then it's kind of all on chance.
Right. And the running game will be better, too. So I really felt like Chance and all of our offensive line were put in a serious disadvantage when the defense knew we had to pass. So, you know, and then when you had either Mettenberger back there, who's a statue, or our rookie, Mariota, who was mobile, but you could tell defenses were catching on and making him hold on to the ball a little longer. If Mariota stays healthy all year, our running game's improved, so there's less third and longs, and we got a guy that maybe is getting rid of the ball, you know, is even a third of a second faster. I think everybody will have much better feelings about Chance and the O-line as a whole, even with a couple rookies on it.
I mean, they don't even have to go out there and be spectacular. They just need to go out there and be consistent. That's all. And keep Mariota healthy. You know, we're not asking for dominance right out of the get-go here, but I think a lot of these ill feelings towards most of these offensive linemen that we currently have or have had, besides Lawan's big mouth, is just generated on them not having any consistency at all, whether it be with each other or on the field.
True. And a revolving door of guys on the line, too. When one guy got injured, then – yeah, okay, yeah, that's what you're saying. We were signing guys off the street, you know, Will Zvitek or whatever his name is, you know.
Will Fitztek. Okay.
There you go.
Chance Warmack was a starting right guard for this team 2 years ago when we started Jordan Palmer. We're handing the ball off to Bishop Sankey, and he had Will Fitztek at the left tackle, and I can't even remember who was the right tackle. He was the guy that came from the Bears. One of those garbage players you've seen, and the O-line coach that he was just trashing a second ago. So, I mean, dude, this guy's kind of been through the ringer on the offensive line. This is the year. This is when it all needs to come together for him.
Hopefully them not taking the option motivates him, but also he realizes that there's no way that we can pay a guard that amount of money in the hopes that he might live up to his potential. Potential just means you haven't produced it yet, you know?
Let me say this. I would be more fearful of him wanting to leave if we weren't bringing a bunch of his buddies from Alabama over here. But now he's getting a bunch of his buddies from Alabama over here. I definitely think that helps. I know that sounds stupid, but, I mean, at the end of the day, there are similar offers on the table or what have you if it gets to that point, which hopefully it won't get to that point because I don't want to lose Chance.
He's also one of these guys that he's never lost. He is not accustomed to being on teams that are awful. I mean, the guy's got, what, two rings at Alabama? You know, was a starter pretty much the whole time that he was there, was a four- or five-star prospect coming out of high school. You know, I mean, it's just been on dominant teams and had that good feeling everywhere he goes. And then he's come to the mess that is the Titans. You know, getting drafted by Mike Munchak and Bruce Matthews, and then he's had to go through all this. So, I mean, yeah, I can understand. I'm glad to hear that he's putting in the work. Speaking of guys who have been knocked down a peg, Bishop Sankey ain't going to make this team. Are we all kind of in agreement on this? Now that they gave his number to Byard, the safety that we took. And I know Paul Kaharsky said this happens. Sometimes you have an offensive and a defensive player who wear the same number. But that don't happen if you're a good player.
No.
That don't happen if you're a second-round pick 3 years ago and the team likes you.
If you're safe on this roster – if you're, like, cemented into being one of those guys that they market to people, the Mariotas, Delaney Walkers, Darrell Casey, so Jason McCourty's, Arakpo, those kinds of guys, your number's not going anywhere if a safety from MTSU comes in the door. I mean, I'm sorry.
I think it doesn't look good for Sankey. Would you guys have gave Byard Sankey's number?
Hell yeah. I would give the guy who does the laundry for the team Sankey's number.
Sankey blows. He needs to go on about his business. We'll cut him in the summer, and the Patriots will do the thing with it they do. They'll pick up just a no-name running back, and he'll go out there with Tom Brady and be amazing. You know, who knows? But he's not very good here at all.
Is he the worst running back on the roster?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so, too. Andrews is much more productive. McCluster kind of brings a little something with return, you know, his return duties. So, not that I'm in love with.
Bishop Sankey is the worst running back on this entire roster. If you lump the fullbacks in there with him, and you include Carl Klug as one of the fullbacks, Bishop Sankey's still at the bottom of that list.
Yeah. I would rather see us line up with Klug in the backfield than I would with Sankey.
If they had any faith in Sankey, then we wouldn't have just spent, you know, 20 minutes talking about us picking Derrick Henry because we wouldn't have went there with the pick.
Yeah,
so,
I think when it comes down to cut down time with those running backs, it's going to be a tough day.
Yeah, I mean, basically, Bishop Sankey's going into camp so that he can take some reps so that, you know, other guys don't get hurt who actually might make this team.
Yeah, Sankey, the only way he's making this roster is if somebody gets injured in camp. That's the only way.
Yeah.
We should call him Choir Boy Sankey instead of Bishop. He's been demoted all the way down to Choir Boy.
Dear Lord.
Catholic thing. Altar boy, yeah.
He couldn't run, and then you put him back there to return punts or kicks or whatever, and he sucked at that. Just like, my God. Spent another second-round picks on this douchebag. I mean, can't do anything. I wasn't even excited about that pick. And whenever it came around, I was like, oh, dear God, we got somebody to play with Jake Locker. And he's been terrible, too.
I talked myself into the Sankey pick when it happened, but you know, or after it happened. But when it happened, that was the first running back taken of the entire draft. And I like the guy. I like Trey Mason out of Auburn. Now, I guess he's gotten himself in a little bit of trouble, you know. But and it seems like listening to your old podcast, you guys were high on Trey Mason as well.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted
that was me.
I was a huge
Trey Mason fan. Yeah.
That was you. All right. I wanted the guy, I guess, was the LSU, Jeremy Hill.
Oh, Yeah, I think so. What happened to him is he's out in San Francisco, isn't he?
No, Carlos Hyde went to San Francisco. So okay. Apparently, any running back other than Sankey taken in that draft would be better. Jeremy Hill plays for the Bengals, and he kind of splits time with Giovanni Bernard.
Correct. I forgot
that.
Yeah.
Right.
I had both of those guys on my fantasy team last year. They were supposed to be an amazing duo, and then they did nothing.
Yeah.
I would take Bishop Sankey's number, give it to Chris Henry, who is probably slightly by edges him out as being the worst second-round running back ever taken in the NFL, also taken by the Titans. That's how much I'm off of Bishop Sankey right now.
They're about as useful. I mean, like, first year you see a lot of Chris Henry and Bishop Sankey, and then they realize he sucks. And then the next year you don't hardly see anything from him again. I mean, it's the Titans' curse as far as second-round running backs go, because Chris Henry was a second-round pick, if I remember correctly.
He was. That's one thing I really do like about this draft is we got guys that actually produced in college. You know, it wasn't like a Chris Henry who was an athlete but not a running back. He had no vision. My one memory of him is that Colt almost killing him, and he just ran a straight line for like 20 yards. Like, it was like, how do you not see the guy running straight at you? You know, and he got up to full speed and just about took the guy's head off. Sankey was, you know, he was okay in college, but he wasn't like, he's not like the production like a Heisman winner like Henry. You know, that's the running backs I want us to take. And if Henry sucks, oh well, he was great in college and a great conference on a great team and a pro style offense. So that's a risk I can live with. Taking a guy from a weird offense out on the West Coast and over every other running back in the second round, I don't know. Sankey makes it through the preseason, but I think when we do the last cuts and the hard decisions have to be made, I'd be surprised if he's not gone by week one. I don't think it'll be in the summer unless it's really evident and they want to maybe give him a chance to catch on somewhere. But, Dan, you had a good point about potential injury or whatever. So I'd say he's gone, but not till late in the off season.
Now, you know what all this means? Just from doing this show long enough, he's going to ball out during preseason, and Dexter McCluster is going to be the guy who falls off. After I spent all preseason last year screaming about how we need to get rid of Dexter McCluster, and he put together one of the best, kind of, especially the early part of the season, the preseasons of his career. That's just how it's going to happen. Welcome to
Maybe.
Titans,
I mean,
everybody. We love you.
It will only help if Sankey makes it a hard decision. Obviously, if Sankey can be a better player than McCluster, and with McCluster making, what, $3 or $4 million a year, That is only going to help his case, but as what we've seen from him leading up to that, it's no. But I'd love for him to be great. I'd love for him to be, our change of pace back while we just drill the fire out of everybody with our two big backs. But I'm not going to bet on it. So
I don't even want that to happen. That's how far gone with Bishop Sankey I am. I'm just like, you know, don't even bother being awesome in camp. Just mosey on over the exit door.
Dan's the hater. You've wronged Dan for the last time, damn it, Bishop. He's done with you. He doesn't even want you to play well. That's how bad, like, cannot be redeemed. He is actively pulling for you to lose.
Absolutely, man. I was that way with Brian Schwenke's another one. I'll be actively pulling for him to not play so well as well at this camp as well. And then after that, I think I'll be fine because Samuel Hill is already gone and my hate list will be gone for now.
Hating on a fourth round center. He just shook.
Okay.
It was sad that he had to be put in the lineup, you know.
Cool.
Go ahead, Augie.
Okay. Okay, so one question that I asked Terry on the last episode that I recorded that I want to ask you two guys. And, Brandon, I'll make you go first. So, you know, we have talked so much about this draft class and everything. We've written so much, talked so much. If you had to pick one guy in this entire class, who do you think is going to be the bust, the biggest bust out of the Titans draft class?
I think Terry had the same answer, but I'm probably the most afraid of Dodd at 33. And that's partly because of how high that pick is. You know, if the guard we take in the fifth or sixth round doesn't become a starter, I mean, you're really not counting on those picks. But we are counting on our, especially in this draft, our first, our 3-2s, and then Kevin Byard, top of the third round. We're counting on those guys contributing immediately. So if any one of them doesn't, then that's a wasted pick. And I'd say that I'm probably most afraid of Dodd being the one. But I'm totally pulling for him, me to be wrong. But, you know, if I got to pin one guy down, it's probably him.
Dano?
Man, it's really difficult because I want to say something that would be so very unpopular. But I feel like our expectations are super high for Jack Conklin to be coming in here and being just we've been spoiled with Roos and Dave Stewart so long. I mean, how are we going to interpret what progress really is as far as right tackle is concerned? But I'm not going to go there. But again, I'm with Brandon. It's got to be Dodd. For me personally, it's got to be Dodd. I just wasn't in love with it. Hopefully, he's one of those guys that just comes out and blows me away. But there's just something about that pick that just rubbed me the wrong way. Maybe it's the anticipation of us just going out and just doing something completely crazy in the second round. I think everybody felt like, oh, we're really going to see something here. And then it was him. And it just I don't know what it was. But I'm totally pulling for him to be amazing, of course.
I thought about Conklin on that too, Dan. And the one thing that – well, obviously you guys know I'm a fan of him, and that's who I wanted. Now, I would have loved it had it been – at 15 and I'm trading up to 8. Yeah, I'm totally
homer.
A homer there. But the thing about Conklin is some teams projected him at guard. So if he fails at right tackle, I don't think he's going to fail at guard. Now, chances are, you know, you don't want to trade up to 8 and take a guard, but Conklin failing is still probably a starting offensive lineman, just not at right tackle. You know what I'm saying? I think either way, we got a starter there.
I'll agree with that. It's just, you know,
and look,
I don't doubt that he's going to be a good right tackle. I really hope so. But with the defenses that we're going to have to play on a consistent basis in Houston and what the Jaguars might be and just some of these really crazy defenses, I mean, it's going to be hard for us not to just go crazy sometimes whenever we're giving up sacks here or things like that. I think what they really just need to do is show slight improvement and continuity throughout the offensive line and be able to run the ball just to make people happy this season. That's what they need to do. They don't have to go out there and be world beaters. But I feel like the perception is there. They're going to go out and just all of a sudden be this amazing line, and that's going to turn some people off.
Because that's what happened with Wawan
outside of his ranting and pissing people off that way.
But I'm definitely a homer, right. and Conklin, I think he's going to be fine. And being a Michigan guy, I like the idea of having a guy from Michigan on one end and a guy from Michigan State being our bookend. So that should put a bow on this episode, guys. There's one other thing I wanted to tell all our listeners out there is we had kind of hinted at doing a contest and getting mailing the Titan memorabilia flag out to one of you guys. So if you guys can come up with funny, unique, whatever, nicknames for any or all of our new Titans from this year's draft, and then use the hashtag MCM Radio to find it, tweet it out to us. You guys got all our Twitter handles or on the Facebook group or even on when August puts the notes to this show up on MusicCityMiracles.com. if you want to put it there. We'll collaborate, and in the next week or two, we'll announce a winner and get one of you guys a flag out there. So, again,
yeah, and
please
the,
like and
one. I'll say real quick, these are like the cool, like official from the stadium, still in the plastic and everything, tighten up flags that like local people will know because they see them like dangling off of houses and off of cranes and everything around town. But I think it'd be a really cool treat for a lot of the folks that don't necessarily get to make it to a Titans game or are stationed around the world. Or apparently, I found out there's like a whole bunch of people in England that like listening to this podcast. So, yeah, you guys take part in that. We'll leave it open for a couple weeks, and it'll be awesome.
Oh, I love that. I love that. And especially hearing about Titans fans in other parts of the world. You know, they got to be in rarefied air there. So thanks again.
Yeah.
Let me say this real quick, and this is just for me. I'm sorry. But if any of you English fans out there know a good Manchester United podcast I can listen to over here, also leave that in the comments or hit me up on Twitter.
Okay, cool. And that's at DanamiteTN. I'm at Drunkest Droog, and August is at AugustWest_MCM. So for my co-host and I, we're looking forward to hearing from you guys. Like, subscribe, review, and hashtag MCM Radio, and be a part of this contest. So let's go win some stuff.